Thought for today. You notice? Thought for today. Debt is a poor substitute for what it buys. My dad was a slow learner. And he had a dad who also was a slow learner. And they were not the Mergenthalers. They were not the great wealthy people of the world. But they also lived a very relaxed, peaceful life. My grandpa liked himself. He had a farm in Germany before he came here. My grandpa. He had the farm in Germany before he came here. And he was used to having his farm and having his mules or whatever, horses pull the plow, or his wife. And they would plow their fields, and finally they came over here. And when they came over here, they lived in the country also. And they farmed their land. But Grandpa Byerly lived closer to the city than Grandpa Cameron. And Grandpa Byerly lived on the outskirts of what is now Milwaukee. Grandpa Byerly lived on what is now almost the middle of Milwaukee. Milwaukee just sort of surrounded the property he had and went on and on. And it's quite nice. But he had a rule that came from old-fashioned people, a rule that came from an age when people were not after things so much. Oh, I'm sure Grandpa liked things. But the rule was this: when you can afford it, you can buy it. When you have the money in your pocket, you can buy it. And I think that he held to that pretty strongly all of his life. Because he worked very hard, saved his money, and when he bought something, it was paid for with cash. He didn't owe anybody anything. And when he bought a car, he paid for it with cash. But he had his little farm on the outskirts of Milwaukee, and it was maybe about 3 acres. Now, we have 104 acres here, and we think, my goodness, 3 acres wasn't very much. But that was right in the city, and it was a good buy. It was a good area. And Grandpa farmed those 3 acres. But he farmed those 3 acres when he came home from work. He worked as a streetcar conductor. He didn't have much learning. He didn't have much education, but he made every penny count. He knew where his pennies came from and where they went. And so, when you get home from work, he'd take off his street conductor clothes and street car conductor clothes, and he put on his farming clothes, the bib overhaul, the Oshkosh Bagosh bib overhauls, and his boots, and he would take the horse and go out and plow the field, or he'd till the field, or he'd fix the field. He did all sorts of things. And then they had, back in the back of their property, a big chicken barn. And in there they raised chickens. And next to it they had hogs. They had maybe about 5 or 6 hogs. And I don't know whether they had sheep or not, but I know they had a milk cow or two. Now all of this for his, I believe it was 8 living children. And he fed them well. He sent them to school, proud of themselves. He worked hard, but he loved it. He was at peace with himself because he owed no man anything. He took care of his family. When the doctor bill came, he paid it. He didn't wait. He didn't have a credit card. He didn't have time payments to pay the doctor. When you have 8 living children, I think there was 12 or 13 altogether, but 8 living children, you have a lot of medical expenses. They had that growing up bit, you know, and they didn't always have the best of everything, and so their bodies were not necessarily building the immune system that was beneficial to them. However, they were as good as everybody else. And Grandpa was not alone. He was like his neighbors. Nobody locked their houses in those days. Nobody needed to protect anything because there was no thievery. That was not in their thought. It's not a matter that there was no thievery around. There was thievery around, but it was not in Grandpa's thought. It was not in the family thought. Everybody knew the Byerly house was open. Everybody knew that everything the Byerlys had was available. Everybody knew that. But nobody ever thought of coming and taking something which was not theirs. So, you see, this is the wonderful thing about all this. This is the wonderful thing about living in another culture, in another age, in another time. Now, we could go to my other grandpa, who also came over from Pomeran, and he was a butcher in Germany. And so when he came to this country, he became a butcher. And he opened up a butcher shop, and he sold meat. And he was a good butcher. But he had to know how to butcher pigs and slaughter cows, because they didn't have all these big farms or barns around that took care of it, like the Chicago stockyards, where they were raised for that purpose. He had to butcher them himself, buy them from the local cowmen, and prepare them for his clientele. Now, Grandpa Cammer was much the same way as Grandpa Byerly. He worked hard. He worked night and day. Nights, he slaughtered the cows and the pigs and whatever, and during the day, he sold them. And the refrigeration wasn't all that good, so they had to sell what they slaughtered. And so whatever they couldn't slaughter, they would make into dog food or cat food or whatever kind of food, or food for people who couldn't afford it. But it was not always the most perfect meat because it hadn't been perfectly refrigerated. They did a lot of salting of the meat in those days because the salt was a preservative for the food. And this became very common and very known. But also Grandpa Cameron, even as late as when he moved to Kingston, Illinois, he did not lock his house. A little community about 3,000-4,000 people, one main street and a few little side streets. The main street had concrete on it and curbing, but the side streets were just dirt. And that's where most people lived, on the side streets. But Grandpa Cameron lived on the main street. He lived at the last intersection before it went out of town. His next door neighbor was a farmer who raised cows and had milk and did all these other good things. Well, Grandpa Cameron was the same way. If he could not pay for something, he did not get it. Well, this is what he taught to my mother, and this is what Grandpa Byerly taught to my father, and this is what they taught to us. So when we wanted to get a radio, this was back in the early 30s, and we wanted a radio. And radios were expensive those days, just like they are now, but you didn't get as much in those days as you do now. So I saw this radio in the store window. It was up on North Avenue, and I don't know what I was doing up there all the time, but I had a girlfriend up there. And so I was going by that area, and I saw this radio in the store. It was no bigger than this, you know, just a little box made out of wood, had a handle on the top, and turned the stations AM stations. No FM or anything like that. But a nice speaker. It was a little bit squeaky, but it was okay. I wanted that with everything in my heart. And so I saved up for it, and I saved. And I was 2 pennies short. And I said to my dad, I'm 2 pennies short to get my radio. He said, you're going to appreciate it all the more when you get those 2 pennies. And I did. I got the 2 pennies. I worked extra time over at Mrs. DeSwart's house, cleaning her house, making it all nice, and she gave me a tip. She gave me a 50-cent tip, which was the biggest thing that I had ever received from her. And so I bought the radio, and I had money to spare. Now, what am I going to do with this money to spare? I had no other want. I had no other desire. I had nothing else that I wanted to have. So I went by the bank, and I said to the people at the bank, I want to put this money in the bank and let it earn money. And they said, that's not quite enough. So I said, okay. So then I went to a different bank. I went to the Wauwatosa State Bank. And the other bank was where I had banked, and you know, I didn't bank, and I don't know why I went there, but anyhow, it was nearby. But I went down to the village to Wauwatosa State Bank, and I went in there with this money, so proud, and I said to the banker, I want to deposit some money and have an account here. And the banker says, well, sit right down, sir. How much do you have? And I told him it was 28 cents, something like that. He says, I'm proud of you. He said, every young man should be raised by parents like you obviously have. I'm proud of you. Now, you put the money in the account here, and it'll be a savings account, and you will earn 1.5% interest on your money. And I thought, wow, we're doing nothing but just sitting there, 1.5% interest. Well, I earned the money, and I kept adding to it a penny a week, 2 pennies, sometimes 3. And you didn't find pennies on the sidewalk in those days because the pennies were too valuable. Whoever spotted it first got it. So we never found money. We never found anything. We went to work for it. And I would walk the neighbor lady down the street. She had a golden retriever. Not a golden retriever, a golden Irish setter, a beautiful Irish setter dog, a beautiful reddish color. And I would take him out for a walk every day. And she would pay me 10 cents a week to take him out every day for a walk. And we'd go walking down in the woods. And then when I got him back, I'd have to comb him because, you know, we got all full of everything. So she got a combing and a walk for 10 cents a week, which was pretty good. But I took that money and I put it in my savings account. Now, debt is a poor substitute for what it buys. If my dad had said, here's the 3 cents so that you can buy that radio, what you need, and see, there was no taxes yet. You buy the radio, and what would have happened? I would have always turned to him to help fill in the gap on that little bit of the money that I'd needed. But as it was, I am not trying to say I'm so good, but I'm the only kid in the family that didn't borrow from my dad. My sisters borrowed from Pop to buy their homes, their first homes. My younger brother borrowed to buy his first home. And I think Ray might have tried to borrow, but I don't think he succeeded. But then when it came time for the death or something, that money was just taken off of the account. But they had a little bit taken off at a time when it was worth a lot of money. So they had $2,000 taken off of their inheritance, which bought them a house. And at the time that the inheritance was done, $2,000 wouldn't buy a down payment on a house. And they really made out well. But that was fine. I had no qualms about that. They were at the right time, in the right place, doing the right thing for them. But what made me feel very distressed was that my father said, never a borrower or a lender be. And he lent to his own kids. And when he lent to his kids, he put them in debt. And never again did they have the easy repartee that they had had with him before. Because now they were a debtor to him. Now they owed him money. In some families, the children can borrow money and it doesn't bother them a bit. If they pay it back, fine. If they don't pay it back, fine. They don't care, you know. But in our family, it was a great responsibility to pay the money back. And so, because of that, the girls would be going up north to visit Pop and Mom as often as they could, saying that they wanted their children to know Grandma and Grandpa. But actually, they felt a debt of the money that they had been loaned. Now, my younger brother, he did the same thing. He came all the way from Virginia several times with his family, which is a long way to come, and let his kids get to know Grandpa too, because they felt a debt. Now, maybe I should have too, but I never felt a debt. I never felt I had to go and pay a call. Like you hear me say occasionally, I got to go pay a courtesy call. May is in the hospital, so I pay a courtesy call to her. Or Ray or Howie or Mark or somebody is having a problem, I pay a courtesy call. But I'm really not paying a courtesy call because I owe them nothing and they owe me nothing. I give my best as I'm doing it. I never allow myself to be in debt. Now, how about you? Do you allow yourself to be in debt? I teach not being in debt. I teach not borrowing. And then the minute somebody wants something, we usually end up loaning it to them. And then they don't pay it back on time. They don't keep up the payments. They're not honorable about the debt. And so the only thing we can do is discharge it. Say, you don't owe it anymore. You don't, because I am not going to be the debtor for somebody. I am not going to have anybody owe me money and feel unhappy about me. So I've just made a decision not to give it to people anymore. Which is unfortunate that some people had to mess up the program. But they didn't really mess up the program. Because that's my nature. My nature is to give everything I have without asking for anything in return. And basically I do that. But I have to be careful. When the money belongs to the organization here, I can't give it out. It has to be given out by a corporate action. It has to be given out by a corporate decision. And when the corporate decision is not there, it's not done. Like Ellen says to me, I wouldn't have given that out. I wouldn't have done that. That's not going to bring any happiness. I wouldn't have done it. Remember, Ellen? And she's right. But you know, when I hear Ellen say that, I hear my father. I hear my father say, don't put anyone in your debt. Don't make anyone feel that they owe you. Don't create somebody having this attitude because they're not going to like you. Not because you're not nice, but because they owe you a debt. And when they owe you a debt, they're going to do their best to avoid you. They don't want to look you square in the eye because they're not doing their thing about it. You know, if a person pays back a debt, a penny a day, a penny a week, you know, $5 a month, whatever it may be, you honor that person. When a person doesn't do that, you don't have much regard for them. And so most of the debts that we have allowed to happen, people don't pay back in any kind of nice way. And we've only had the feelings about them that we were not happy about them. Debt is a poor substitute for what it buys. If I had gotten the 3 cents from my dad to buy that radio, I could never in all my life say, I bought my first radio all by myself. And 3 cents was the difference between buying it all by myself and going in debt to my dad. Or even my dad just saying, here, go, like we would do to our children today. Here, go, take it. I went over to East County Lumber, and I bought some nails. And the nails were $1.99, including tax. And I gave the guy $2. And he said, I don't have any pennies. I said, I'll keep it. And then, as I was walking out the door, I noticed the fly swatter. And I wanted the fly swatter, and that was 98 cents or something like that, 99. And so I gave him another dollar, and he says, I need another penny. Oh, you've given me one already. And so it was paid for. But interesting, isn't it? Interesting how these things work out. When we are generous, it always comes back to us. When we are stingy, it never does. When I am in a restaurant and the money is so much, I don't, big deal, but I don't bother with the pennies. I just leave them there. Why? Because they just pile up in your pocket. And you really don't have much use for pennies. But I give them there, and they say, oh, thank you so much. They thank me for pennies, you know. And okay, you know, but it meant something to them, because that's what they're always short of, because people don't have pennies in their pocket. So think about this here. Debt is a poor substitute for what it buys. When you owe the bank, you cannot say that is my car. You say the bank and I own that car. That is not my house. The bank and I own that house. Those are not my clothes. The credit card company and I own that clothing. But you see how silly it is? We have a chance to follow in with what our dear friend Emerson says, never a borrower or lender be. And I believe Shakespeare had his foot in there too. Never a borrower or lender be. Very, very valid. Debt is a poor substitute for what it buys. Just remember that. I love you.